protesting has certainly flourished in recent times, especially recent days, has it not? In fact, coming up on October 18th, there'll be the next No Kings protests. So far, over 2,500 registered No Kings events. You can find out more about that at nokings.org. And while protesting may be a new experience for people who take part in one, certainly not a new means and method in America to bring attention to a cause or create change. Protesting really is part of the heritage of America when you think about it. My next guest with her latest book, Guide You Through Acts of Protest Throughout the Ages of America. You'll recognize some of the causes and people, while others will be an introduction for you. Her book is A Protest History of America. While being an author, she's a professor of constitutional law and Africana Studies at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. She also wrote and hosted the Emmy Award-winning PBS series Your Democracy. Gloria Brown Marshall, how are you today, Gloria?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, thank you for doing this book. I'd like to learn more about John Jay College. It's jj.cuny.edu. We have that link over at our homepage. As your book quickly introduces people to the fact of protesting being a lengthy part, if not a foundation of America's history, and you talk about so many of the variables as far as purpose and cause and direction, creation, is there a common thread of that all that protests share throughout history that you found in your research?
I found about two or three common threads. One is that there's a vision of the country or a vision of personal freedoms that are beyond what the status quo is offering. And so, therefore, people want to push against what's being offered and expand rights to include more than what they have been given. Another is a hope beyond what they have. Because when you think about the little person, the little guy pushing up against the status quo that includes the courts and the government and the money and everything, there's got to be a belief that's beyond just that little person's belief. It's almost like they were attuned into something that's greater than oneself. And then the final is a faith that even though it may feel like these are insurmountable odds, that they can push forward and create something new and different. And that's how we've been able, from the Declaration of Independence all the way up to today, expand our country to be more than it ever thought it could be.
Because when you think about it, you mentioned Declaration of Independence, one of the first protests of note in colonial America resulted in the Battle of Bunker Hill and led to the Revolutionary War, which led to the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly. So you have these colonists who were ragtag people coming together as farmers and merchants and others fighting the monarch, you know, King George and all that was established at the time. And so whether or not it's Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement or it's the women's movement, we have interviews in my book, A Protest History of the United States, with Gloria Steinem, with people who were in college at a time in which they were fighting for voting rights. And so from the colonial time period of the indigenous people fighting against the Europeans taking their land and holding on, the indigenous holding on to their culture. So I expand the idea of what protest is and the different ways in which people have protested, because it's always been more than just the protest in the street. It's always included people sending in letters, petitioning, and standing up for their rights, like Rosa Parks not giving up her seat. All those different ways in which people can protest. So there's a form for people to protest and a vision for people to want a country that's beyond what's being handed to them.
That brings up the point, too, because not every protest are planned protests. Some could be very spontaneous, and I guess the word is organic. They just grow within themselves to make the voice a loud voice.
Exactly. But what I found in my research in writing my book, A Protest History of the United States, is that once that first trigger, the emotion of it, the anger, frustration, or whatever that people have about their employment situation. That's how labor unions were formed, because the workers said, no, I want something beyond what you're handing me. I want more safety. I need more money. I need to have better standard of living. And so they protested and formed unions. So they start off with the emotional part, but then becomes more strategic. And protest is then used to change policies and create other freedoms and have laws repealed or laws changed or laws created that are going to protect freedoms that may be on paper in the Constitution, but they become a reality of a situation. And that's what protest does. It takes what might be written on paper in the Constitution and makes it a reality for day-to-day life. And one of the major examples is that of the 8-hour workday. That took from a law that was passed in the 1800s. It took decades for it to become a part of our day-to-day life. So when we wake up each day, we're waking up with the benefits of protest, even though we've forgotten that it took protest to make it our reality.
You mentioned what's written in the Constitution. It's also what's written in court decisions from the lower courts to the Supreme Court. And what's promised is not always, as the phrase goes, justice for all. Which brings about the question, I think, that you answer so well in your book, A Protest History of the United States. The civil rights movement was a lot more than what we just saw in the 50s and 60s, isn't it?
It really is. And it took a lot longer than people thought, because we saw it on television. Because think about the development of television to show us the civil rights movement. Before that, remember, you know better than I do, that it was radio. And so you really couldn't capture the civil rights movement's emotions and everything, the context of it, on radio. So with the development of TV and being able to see television news more often and nationally, we began to see the civil rights movement actually take effect. But it was in the works decades before that, as was the women's movement. Women gained the right to vote in 1920. They had been working on the right to vote for 50 years before that, at least. And so when we think about what we're able to see, we begin to realize, when you research, especially from my research in the protest history of the United States, just how long change takes. And people want the change right away. They want to protest on Friday and see the change on Monday, and that's not normally how it works when it comes to protest.
Talking with Gloria Brown Marshall and her book, A Protest History of the United States. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. I mentioned the No Kings rallies that are next round is coming up on October 18th, and they have almost 2,500 locations planned. You look at how that movement began. It was a couple of hundred locations, maybe 50 people there, 25 people there. And within, I think, about 6 months, it's grown to this level. So sometimes protest requires devotion and dedication, devotion and faith side of things, certainly, but devotion to cause as well.
It certainly does. And once it begins to pick up steam, you'll see leaders emerge from the protests. And the government or the corporation or whatever is at the heart of protest will then start cracking down. And as it gets worse in its treatment of protesters, because protesting is inherently dangerous, because the status quo, the society, the traditionists, and other people will think, who are you to stand up against us? Don't you understand we know what's best for you? You take what we give you and be quiet about it. And if you're not going to be quiet, then we're going to crack down, we're going to use violence, and then other people join in and try to start using violence as well, and then vigilante groups. So you're going to see these standoffs between people who are protesting, and more people then join in the protest, saying, that's not fair, that's not the way people should be treated. And as that begins to expand, the protest, as you pointed out, will bring in more and more people who are persuaded that they too have to take a stand on behalf of the rights that we want to enjoy.
Of all the people that you focus on in A Protest History of the United States, as I referred to in the introduction, some will be recognizable to people, but who's one of the people you write about that you hope people will want to learn even more about, study more about, and learn from them, and what they accomplished, what they gave their dedication to, and the cause that they brought attention to?
I would say, I'm going to mention Tom Hayden from University of Michigan. He was a protester who gave us the teach-in. And that was something that's very important. We need to learn what these issues are. Why are we protesting? What are we protesting about? And what strategies can we use? He used the idea of the educational system to say, let's take it beyond the classroom into the communities. I think people should have more teach-ins around the issues. What does it mean to have a No King's Day? Why is it thought of that this person in the White House now is acting like a king, besides the fact he called himself one? But why are we in need of protests right now? And another person I would say is Daisy Bates. Now, that was another form of protest. She was a secretary of the NAACP in Little Rock, Arkansas, and she was the one who helped young people desegregate the Central High School there in Little Rock. And she also went on to stand up against people who wanted to force her to disclose the members of the NAACP there. She almost, you know, was put in jeopardy so many times and was threatened many times. And these are two very different people in two different eras, but they represent different forms of protest. And I think they were very well known in their time, but then time passes and we don't know them. And so a protest history of the United States, it talks about what the indigenous did in their forms of protest 500 years ago, the enslaved uprisings as a form of protest, as well as anti-war protests, forming unions. What I want people to get is that there are so many ways in which you can protest. Yes, you can march in the street, but the nameless people, and as you mentioned, 2,500 protests around the country have been, they're going to be formed by people will never know their name, but will benefit from their actions. But people who have led protests have put themselves in jeopardy as well. And we should remember who they are and the sacrifices they made.
And for you listening, I want to give you a reminder, too. If you're one of those people who thinks that protesting is just talking and nothing results from it, well, let me give you a name to remind you of the importance of protesting. Lech Wałęsa, who was a shipyard worker in Poland, and the protests he led in those shipyards, put it mildly, certainly changed the direction of the country of Poland, did it not, as it shook free from communism. So if you can do it on a grand scale, you could do it on a local scale, and you can achieve what's righteous and just. I mean, you can certainly have beliefs that are toxic and poison, and once you try standing for those, you'll quickly learn that they are what they are. But for protesting what is right, what is fair, what is just, there's no reason not to do everything you can to ensure that all that comes about for everybody. To learn more and get a better understanding of protest history in our nation, that's where Gloria's book is the go-to, A Protest History of the United States. Along with being an author, she's professor of constitutional law and Africana studies at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, also an Emmy Award-winning writer and host of the PBS series Your Democracy. Gloria Brown Marshall, thank you for the reminder of this important element of our history as a nation and how it preserves and strengthens us as a nation. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, and power to the people.